this is your Polycast for Thursday, February 2nd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Minnesota joins a lawsuit against President Trump's immigration order, and a jury convicts a man for shooting people at a protest. Minnesota Attorney General Lori Swanson says she's joined a lawsuit by Washington State against President Trump's immigration order. She says she believes the action is unconstitutional for a number of reasons.
That it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, which essentially says that people should be treated similarly and you shouldn't single certain people out for different types of treatment. The Establishment Clause saying that the government is not and should not be in the business of establishing or preferring certain religions. And also the Due Process Clause of the Constitution, which says that people ought to be given notice and due process of law before they're treated differently or discriminated against. There's also a federal law, the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, which prohibits discrimination in the issuance of visas on the basis of nationality, race, or place of birth or residence. And so the lawsuit also alleges a violation of that law.
Meanwhile, confusion about the president's executive order remains, but administration officials have tried to clarify some of the details. Matt Sepik has more.
When Trump first issued the order last Friday, some lawful permanent U.S. residents were detained at American airports or blocked from boarding planes altogether. Kamal Mohammed of Minneapolis, a U.S. citizen, tried to travel with his family from Somalia this week. But in a Facebook video posted Tuesday, Mohammed said airline officials would not allow his wife, who was recently granted a green card, to get on the plane.
It looks like we are being I'm being denied to bring my family along with me, and it's very devastating.
And on Saturday, Fatima Farmad of Minnetonka, a permanent U.S. resident originally from Iran, was detained at the Los Angeles airport. She was traveling with her mother, brother, and 11-month-old son. They were on their way back from a wedding in Iran. Farmad says immigration officials were polite, but provided her with few answers.
After 5 hours, an officer said to me that you are done, you're almost done, just wait for 10 minutes. And that didn't happen. 1 hour, it passed 1 hour, 2 hour, and never happened. I don't know why he kept promising me that you're almost done.
Farmad and her family were made to wait 13 hours before they could leave the airport. They were never told why. Also seeking answers are many members of Congress, including Tim Walz of southern Minnesota. The DFLer says he has always had a good relationship with Customs and Border Protection officials at the Twin Cities Airport, and they've always answered his questions, whether about security procedures or screening lines. But not this time.
They just had a prepared statement, and they were very clear that they have been instructed not to answer any questions. And these are folks I've known for a decade.
Walz sent a long list of questions to Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly on Tuesday. Among them, how many people, if any, have been detained at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport? Are dual citizens being screened for removal? Are CBP officials in the Twin Cities complying with the temporary restraining orders issued by 4 federal judges? So far, Walz says he has no indication that anyone has been detained at MSP, but he says it's illegal for the Trump administration to evade congressional oversight.
Not melodramatically, this is the constitutional conflict people talk about. Whether it becomes a constitutional crisis or not depends on how well they're willing to fix this. But you, as the executive branch, do not get to say no to the oversight of the legislative branch.
At a news conference yesterday, Homeland Security officials tried to clarify how Trump's executive order is being implemented. Secretary Kelly says the agency is complying with all court orders, and Acting Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Kevin McAleenan said in the first 72 hours of the order, 500,000 foreign nationals were allowed into the United States.
We denied boarding to 721 travelers that had visas from the affected countries, but we actually processed for waivers 1,060 lawful permanent residents of the United States, as well as an additional 75 waivers granted to immigrant visa and non-immigrant visa holders.
McAleenan says visa holders from the 7 affected countries will be denied boarding at overseas airports, and travelers with dual citizenship will be vetted based on the passports they present. Yesterday, White House spokesman Sean Spicer said green card holders no longer need a waiver. Twin Cities immigration lawyer Chris Lee is urging his clients to be patient while opponents of Trump's order figure out their next moves in court.
Just give it time so that we can fight back. All the organizations are getting together and hopefully we can push back.
Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Three races for seats in the Minnesota legislature cost more than $1 million last year. Brian Baxt has the story.
The two House seats and one Senate seat were all won by Republicans. They cover districts in the St. Cloud, Plymouth, and Lakeville areas. A few other races were right on the cusp of $1 million. And most of that money was spent on independent ads done by parties and outside groups, not done by the candidates themselves. It was part of an expensive campaign overall. Financial reports filed with state regulators show at least $21 million in outside spending and nearly $12 million by candidates. Republicans got the best return for their money, winning majorities in both the Minnesota House and Senate. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A jury convicted Alan Scarsella of multiple assault charges yesterday for shooting and wounding five men who were at a protest in 2015. The nearly month-long trial featured evidence that Scarsella had expressed racist views about African Americans through text messages with friends. Prosecutors claimed Scarsella's words led him to shoot. Brant Williams reports.
Someone in the packed courtroom let out an excited cry when a court clerk read the first guilty verdict against Scarsella. One of the men listening closely to the verdicts in the courtroom was one of Scarsella's victims, Cameron Clark.
Oh, man, I had the butterfly because I was kind of really thinking that they were going to be on his side and was going to let him go because he was claiming self-defense.
Clark was protesting the killing of his cousin Jamar Clark by a Minneapolis police officer in 2015. That fatal shooting sparked more than 3 weeks of demonstrations outside the 4th Precinct Police Station. On the night of November 23rd, Cameron Clark, Wesley Martin, Tevin King, Walter Hoskins, and Draper Larkins were at the police precinct when Scarsella and three other men showed up. Scarsella claimed the men were part of a smaller group who had broken off from the main protest and pursued him and three of his companions down a dark street. He testified that one of the men said, "White boy, you're going to die." Scarsella said he told the men to stay back and fired when he saw one of them pull out a knife. Clark caught two of the eight bullets fired by Scarsella that night. One hit his thigh.
And I'm still blessed to be alive because the doctor just kept telling me how lucky I was from that bullet missing my artery a half an inch.
Prosecutors said there were no weapons found on any of the victims that night. They say Scarsella provoked the men to follow him by using a racial slur. During the trial, prosecutors read from texts sent by Scarsella in which he talks about, quote, shooting black guys. Defense attorneys could not be reached for comment after the verdict. Scarsella's most serious conviction, first-degree assault, was for the wounding of Tevin King, who nearly bled to death from a gunshot wound to his abdomen. Prior to the trial, some of the friends and supporters of the victims complained that the Hennepin County Attorney's Office did not go far enough. They wanted Scarsella to face attempted murder charges. However, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman says that didn't apply to this case.
We charged the highest count that the evidence that we knew at the time would support. And during the case, the evidence didn't support an attempted murder case.
Freeman says his office will ask for the highest sentence possible. However, he said Scarsella will likely be sentenced to 12 to 16 years in prison. A sentencing date has not yet been set. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.